All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Tuesday, April 18th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is
James Davis.
And we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, where you can get a free 3-day trial to our projection system, DFSR.com/MLB. I've been told, I've been giving out the wrong link. /MLB will get you a free 3-day trial to our system powered by Lineup Lab. That's optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. MLB includes our NBA projection system as well while the playoffs are lasting. So about as good a deal as you'll find in the industry. Head on over, DFSR.com/MLB. Free for 3 days, just $29.95 a month after that. And you are all good to go on this very special day. Tax day, buddy. Are you excited? I know you're feeling, you always feel
anxious. I'm excited because our accountant just emailed me back. So I'm excited that it looks like I'll be paying my taxes on time.
Oh, good. Yeah, me too. I'll check that email too. I'm really excited to send that check in.
I can't wait, dude. I just want to say thanks to everyone who spends my hard-earned money. Well, first of all, for making it all possible. So thank you for that. Without getting too political here, I will say that it seems like it's a job well done on how my tax dollars are being spent. Not. That's the, thank you. Yeah, that's right. I used not, okay?
That was an amazing use of not.
Yeah, slammed it. No one saw that one coming.
Man, the knot thing. People that still employ the knot as a as
nobody
like a
still employs.
Oh my god, yes they do. But I know we're going off the rails, and this is the MLB pod. But like, and we've already gotten political and making fun of people. But like, yeah, the people definitely still employ knot.
No one says knot.
Have you read the comment section or the chat room on our site? People definitely do. All right.
Let's get
into a Tuesday of baseball. No, for the first time I think in a while, there's no day baseball. All the games being played at 7 o'clock or after tonight. Though we go back to some day baseball again tomorrow. Interesting slate here with a bunch of bad pitchers going, and then some pretty top tier guys that I think are going to help round out cash games pretty soon. And if you hear this buzzing in the background, I'm sorry, but my neighbor chose this morning to resand his deck. So if you hear the buzzing, there's just simply nothing I can do about it, short of yelling at him and asking him to stop. But I don't think that's going to have the desired effect. All right, let's get into some pitching where we can start for cash games today. Do you see Scherzer as just kind of like the lock 'em up, just guy you have to basically play in cash games today? Or is there a case to be made against Scherzer, or is he kind of just the guy?
Now, I don't think there's too strong a case to be made against him. Year over year, we're going to look at the first couple starts as somewhat meaningful. Mostly what we're looking for here are dramatic outliers, big changes in K per nine, walks per nine, and not even really ground ball and fly ball ratio. But Scherzer just looks like the same guy he was last year. You know, the Ks are slightly up, the walks are slightly up. I'll chalk that up to variance. He hasn't put up huge innings in his first couple starts. That's because he's been throwing a lot of pitches, striking everyone out. I think they're kind of easing him in a little bit. And yeah, on a night where you don't have a ton of good big money options at pitcher, grabbing Scherzer at 11-4 against an Atlanta team that's kind of struggled against right-handed pitching in the past. You know, they don't have a lot of pop in that lineup, minus Freddie Freeman famously going off last night. They don't really have a ton of pop against right-handed pitchers, so I think it's just a terrific spot.
Yeah, I think you see him as the chalk play, though I sometimes am not totally correct in these things because it's a little bit difficult for me sometimes to judge ownership percentages, mostly because I see him as such. Thanks, buddy. I see him as such the clear far and away favorite. He's a minus 175, which I believe is the highest money line on the slate, though there's a couple other ones that are a little bit close. The run line's already dropped from 8 to 7.5. I think people are probably just too bullish in general on the Braves, of like what the Braves team actually is. And, you know, Freddie Freeman, and this is a thing where, you know, he was a pretty chalk play last night. We wrote him up, and then he ended up being in some top lineups, but not all, definitely not in the very top, and of course he goes off. You know, the problem with Freeman is it's not a Freddie Freeman problem, it's more just like the Braves problem. Like if Freddie Freeman was on the Cubs, then he'd be like a $5,000 player. The problem is he is surrounded by losers basically. Yeah. And that causes an issue for him specifically on his ability to score runs. So that's the thing that our system is going to be bearish on a guy like Freeman for not the whole season, but for a lot, just simply because, not because of him, but for the other guys. That bodes well for Scherzer tonight. They don't strike out a ton, Atlanta, but they're going to, I just think, struggle to put up really any meaningful rallies against a guy like Scherzer. If you had to guess Scherzer's ownership percentage on FanDuel tonight, what do you think it would be?
Oh, I don't know. It's hard for me to put my finger on that. I'd say we're north of 30%. Maybe it could go higher. It's just, I can't prognosticate that sort of thing. I often think, because I'm stupid. Good call. I don't even necessarily think it's worth it in baseball a lot of times to try to pin down the chalk, just because baseball is such a game of decimal points that It's just really hard to know. So I think he will be the highest owned pitcher, I'll say that much.
Yeah, we're going to have him in 100% of cash games tonight, and I love situations like this where I think that where the guy to me is so clear-cut in first cash games, it does make me want to have a little bit more exposure. And I do think there is plenty of offensive value to be had where you're not really even – you're not making any real big sacrifices to get him in lineups, even at 11-4, just because some of the pricing on – and we're going to talk about some of the stacks that we can kind of look at tonight where you're getting some value. But you're really not doing – you're not really bending over backwards to get his salary in. And you're not – the same thing on DraftKings where you're really not getting – you're really not having to do a ton of work on him either. I think
– So what's the case for Scherzer over like you, Darvish, say, in that high price tier?
Well, Darvish, I think, one, frankly, just getting from the National League to the American League, it helps just in terms of just being able to roll through the pitcher spot probably twice for Scherzer helps him. Oakland as a team does not K a ton. I like Darvish too, frankly. So it's not like it's sure. Scherzer, Darvish is probably 1A in terms of just kind of big money starter tonight. But Scherzer just has like slightly better matchup. I think the money line is a little bit higher, right? Darvish is only at a -130 against Oakland. That matters, right? Like if you're calculating expected win points, just having that extra, you know, -40 or whatever that works out to be in decimal points. But for Scherzer, it really does matter. Darvish will work long counts. It's a little harder for him to go longer into games than it is for Scherzer. So I think those are the cases. But I love Darvish as a pivot off of Scherzer for tournaments, just because he does have just kind of not the same exact level of strikeout upside, but he has significant upside when it comes to strikeouts. Though, how much do you put in stock in early season returns? So if you look at Darvish's, again, our system really likes him, so I'm not trying to talk myself out of Darvish here. But, you know, you said the first couple games as good maybe proxies for what a guy is happening for a guy. Darvish has two numbers which are a little concerning. One is the strikeouts from last year, they were 11.84 per nine last season, 8.84 this season. So really significant drop with the walks kind of spiking. He was 2.78 per nine last year, 4.66. How much for 2017 and three starts? How much stock do you put in those kind of numbers, which are significantly different, going the wrong direction for a guy like him?
Yeah, I definitely put some stock in it, no question about it. I think it's worth noting that he wasn't particularly good against the A's when he faced them 2 games ago. 5 Ks against 3 walks in 6 innings, although he did allow just a 1 earned run. But it's still so early, man, and it's cold, and there's a lot of weird stuff going on. I will say that the last game, he pretty much replicated last year's peripherals, getting 13 strikeouts per nine and 2.5 walks per nine. So I think that it's way too early to make any assumptions about Darvish. When I'm talking about weighting the last few games more heavily than the prior season, what I'm saying is, I would have had my eyebrow raised if he hadn't just had this last good start against the Angels. I'll be clear about that to start. And more of just like a, this is kind of curious sort of situation. Given that he has the good start under his belt, I'm just going to assume he's the same guy who was last year and that the variants and all that stuff will come out in the wash.
When we're looking at starting pitcher 2 on DraftKings, I think you can consider him but I think it's going to be pretty easy to go cheap on a guy like Severino tonight. He is just frankly mispriced on DraftKings. He's only 6,500 against the White Sox. He's been awesome to start the year. He's had 2 starts, 12 innings, 12.75 Ks per nine to 1.5 walks, and actually been running a little bit bad in terms of ERA. Like his ERA is 4.5, but the xFIP is 1.89, which is much more in line with what his peripherals are. He's had some little bit of trouble with the left on base percentage. Do you think he ends up being like, he's like kind of like not necessarily a secret anymore that he was a prospect, right? The K's probably not going to stay in this range for the whole season, or they're definitely not going to stay in this range for the whole season, but this is getting close to like butting up against elite K stuff. Do you think he's just where most people go to only 6,500 just to fill out that starting pitcher 2 slot?
Yeah, I think to give you a little background on Severino, I mean, he was an elite K guy in the minors. Like, he was this guy with electric stuff, double-digit Ks per nine, basically until he hit AAA in 2015. And he's a really, really solid guy who, you know, can pitch innings when things are going well and really up and down the chain. So the question with him was he going to ever convert into starting form in the majors? It's always tough with guys like him, especially, you know, guys with deceptive stuff. Because sometimes they can fool lower class hitters and then it doesn't work as well against the upper tier. The thing I'm trying to keep my eye on for Severino going forward is the BABIP numbers. For 93 innings so far in the majors, well, I guess I'm not counting 2015. 83 innings over the last 2 years. A 327 BABIP, that could either be him running insanely bad, or it could be a sign that when he gets behind in counts, he makes mistakes in the zone, or, you know, there's multiple reasons why that could be happening. I will say he never had that problem in the minors, though, and I tend to think it's more of a blip than anything else. So, while yes, very obviously mispriced on DraftKings, you're going to play him there, but I'm starting to wonder if, like, if we get a good start out of him, or if the peripherals, you know, kind of continue to be where they are, and but the performance, the ERA, and the wins and all that stuff doesn't follow, he might just be one of these weird pitchers we need to pay attention to more than just the XFIP on, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I was wrong before talking about Scherzer having the highest money line. It's actually Severino. He started at minus 155 and has been bet up to minus 190 with the run line dropping from 8.5 to 7.5 kind of just overnight. So Vegas came in with the wrong, basically came in with probably being pretty wrong on where the Yankees stood in this game with him pitching. The good news for him is, so usually you can get worried about righties in Yankee Stadium because that short porch in right is just so inviting for lefty hitters. The White Sox don't have any lefty hitters, really. Like, they're two lefties in their lineup, or Melky Cabrera, which really doesn't strike any fear in you, and, like, Cody Ash. You know, the rest of their lineup is all righties who will strike out. So, like, Saladino, Tim Anderson, Jose Abreu, Todd Frazier. That's exactly what you want when you have a righty going in Yankee Stadium. So I think kind of everything lines up for him to be just a great play on DraftKings, especially a really good play on FanDuel as well, where you're getting him for only, I think he's like in the 7,000 range as well. So I'd still go Scherzer just because I just think he's better for the money, but 7,700 on Severino will keep those Scherzer number ownership numbers lower because, I don't know, maybe he just has like the same.
You think so? You think people are going to go there for cash games?
I think so, man. I mean, well, think about it. Like, what are the things we look for in terms of cash games with starting pitchers? Like, the basic metrics. We look for money lines, check, right? Like, win expectation is there for him. He's been very good. Sure. The K numbers for him are there. The matchup is good. The run line, I believe, is just the White Sox have lower implied runs than the Braves. Or, no, excuse me, they're right at the same level, 3.2. I mean,
yeah, I don't know. I just feel like innings pitch matters, like,
it definitely matters. It definitely matters. And I'm going to play Scherzer.
I guess you're paying a lot. You're paying a lot for Scherzer. Yeah, no, you're talking some sense, I guess. I guess you just don't generally see, strictly in terms of ownership rates, you just generally don't see people just throw caution to the wind and pay $7,700 for a pitcher who has a 4.5 ERA.
Right. And we understand, though, that ERA is, like the XFIP is probably
you and I understand that. I'm just saying the casual person who's just going to play DFS tonight and they're going to put in a handful of lineups, like, are they going to let their $20 ride on a guy who with a no track record who just has a good K to walk ratio? I just don't think so. But I guess we'll
after those three, so we talked about Scherzer, Darvish, and Severino. Is there any other pitchers I can think about targeting here, maybe for a tournament upside? Or, I mean, is there anywhere else even to go with cash games? Any other arms that you're kind of looking at?
Yeah, no, probably not for cash games. I think we kind of touched on the big hits for cash games. But a guy I'm looking at for big tournament purposes is Zach Wheeler. And now this is kind of off the wall. Like, he really hasn't gotten the innings so far. But the peripherals have been there. And, you know, again, he's gotten stomped in the ERA department. There's a lot to not like about Zach Wheeler so far, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But he was a really promising prospect before missing a significant time there. You know, he's a guy who was touching double-digit strikeouts per nine in the minors as a part of the Giants and Mets system, was looking like he could produce 9 Ks per nine or a K per inning in the majors before getting hurt. So I know the Mets are still easing him back in, but it is a really nice matchup in a good park and definitely a way you could get some separation.
All right, let's talk some stacks that we can target for cash games tonight or tournaments as well. I'm going to get the elephant, I guess the elephant in the room. Is that the thing that's like weird that you want to talk about, the elephant in the room?
Okay, yeah, you got it, buddy. I think you're on tilt because of your
I'm just so on tilt. This is your first time on the podcast. I've already had to move my operation from my office to another room in the house because this guy, I want to just go out and yell at him, even though I know he's doing his job and whatever.
It's beach season, baby. This is what you get for living on the lovely shores of We Won't
Say
Where.
That's true. Everyone's prepping their house to sit outside all summer. Okay, I'm going to get this one out of the way first, the Blue Jays. So the Blue Jays, this is one of these situations where baseball can be a maddening sort of venture from a projection system standpoint or also just from a day-to-day standpoint. The Blue Jays have been horrible to start the year. No doubt about it. They cannot score runs. I think they have the least amount of runs scored in the majors this year. I'm just scrolling down the list real quick. Right, yeah. They've scored 34 runs. No other team is in the 30s. Most other teams are like in the 50s or 60s at this point in the season. They get a great matchup against the Brian Williams, the lefty from the Red Sox. Their run line, their implied runs are sitting pretty high as we look at, you know, Vegas totals.
Sure.
What is the truth here? Because I know I'm seeing people in the chat already. I know this is going to be a thing that's going to kind of go on all day, and it's.
Oh, I can't wait, buddy. I can't wait for if they run bad for another 5 days, how the chat is going to snowball here. So what's going on here? Well, there's two things. First of all, yeah, there is different personnel with the Blue Jays this season. You know, Encarnacion's gone. Donaldson's been hurt. Bautista's a year older. Like, there's definitely actual things that have changed about the Blue Jays situation. But here's the thing you should know. Vegas knows that too, okay? Like, it's not like when Vegas is talking about a run line and they're like, yeah, Blue Jays' highest run total. And then someone comes in and is like, dude, we've been getting stomped on these Blue Jays bets. What's going on? The guy's like, hold on, let me check. Oh, God, Encarnacion's not on the Blue Jays anymore? Like, they know that that's changed. And so does our projection system. So does Steamer and Zips and all the projectors out there. So then you just need to ask yourself, are all of these models that have been painstakingly developed over many years, are they all wrong? Are 2 weeks more significant than, you know, all the data that goes into these models? My answer would be no. And so, sure, maybe this could play out. Maybe we could see instant regression from all sorts of players. This could just not be the Blue Jays year. Or maybe it's just baseball and it's 2 weeks of cold weather games on a lower rate of games than usual, and we just need to be a little bit patient. I will say that getting an edge in DFS is harder now than it ever has been before. One of the ways you can get an edge is being greedy when other people are being fearful, and we're getting great prices on the Blue Jays right now. Everyone's terrified. If this was a 2-week stretch that happened in August, no one would even know the difference if everyone's season lines were still the same. I am not one of the fearful ones. I'm happy to be a buyer on the Blue Jays basically until the price comes back, and I'm expecting to get paid just the same way I did when Bryce Harper was running bad and we got paid on him. Same way with Mike Trout when he was running bad. Like, people run bad, that's the time to buy. Don't buy when everyone else is buying. That's how you lose.
this is such a fantastic time to buy guys like Bautista, guys like Kendrys Morales.
Of course.
Tulo, if he can get if he's hitting like around fifth in the lineup, Russell Martin as well. And I'm not sure if you're going to see Pilar and Pierce hit 1-2 again, or if they're going to move Bautista up in the order like they did last season. You know, they hit him lead off at times. The Blue Jays have been fine kind of doing that from time to time, just moving their best hitters up into the lineup because, I mean, that just makes sense, and good teams understand this. And Blue Jays are like sort of on that cusp of understanding these things. So I don't know if you see a lineup shake up with them tonight. Either way, the entire top of that lineup, all those righty hitters against a guy like Brian Johnson, who, I mean, he did strike out some guys in the minors, but the run line for them, 4.9, it hasn't moved since open. I don't believe. Excuse me, it's ticked up for the Blue Jays. It started at 4.7 and ticked up to 4.9. Yeah. As their money line kind of went up as well. So. Look, you put it pretty well. Do you want to? Is it hard to trust when you see these numbers? Yes. Are we going to get complaints like Blue Jays again? ! Yes. And it's just going to be a situation where, again, we're just going to be answering the same questions. This is the perfect time to buy on guys like this. We have long track records, especially with guys like Bautista on their splits against lefties. Historically, they're just good, and I think that, I don't know. Is tonight where the tide turns? Maybe not. I'll still continue to buy them as long as, like, this is kind of where we are with the Blue Jays.
The thing is, chances are tonight will not be the night it turns. And that's the thing people really have trouble wrapping their minds around with baseball. Like, baseball is, it's very hard to predict on a night-to-night basis who's actually going to get the points. Nobody really does this exceptionally well. This is why, you know, you don't see lineups with all of the guys who hit home runs in cash game lineups, right? Like, you'll get maybe one of them. Maybe you're the people who got Freddie Freeman and you're in good shape, and maybe you're not. Like, I don't know. I think it's just a good play. Play it for the next 5 days would be my advice, and see how you feel at the end of those days. Don't judge this pick based on tonight's performance.
After the Blue Jays, or maybe even before the Blue Jays, is there another stack that's kind of standing out to you that's just in a good spot here?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's another one of those weird nights where it's very hard to pick a lot of stacks. Like, it's this combination of teams that are fairly priced based on, you know, what they've kind of done early in the season, pitchers who are just okay but not terrible, and so we really don't have a lot of feeding grounds. But the other team that's really burbling to the surface right now is just the Cubs. The Cubs are very straightforward stack. It's hard to pay for all of them, but if you play Severino, you can absolutely get them. Right now, the line just came out. I guess they're getting their weather reports in Chicago, and they, I think, have moved into the highest overall total of the day. So, you know, you got your big lefty bats there going up against Jimmy Nelson, who's, you know, the 1.3 ERA, kind of smoke and mirrors there. So you can get all the usual candidates there, you know, Schwarber, Rizzo, that you know the names in Chicago that you should be keeping your eye out for. So that's a pretty obvious one. Again, it might be kind of difficult to play people in the non-Schwarber category for cash games based on price, but certainly one you should be keeping an eye on. It sounds like you want to
Schwarber's price hasn't moved at all, which is crazy. Like, he's still 3,400 on FanDuel. I think that's like where he opened the season, and it just hasn't moved. And this is a guy that just hits leadoff in the best offense in baseball. Like, I just don't. Like, I'm kind of getting tired of just having...
You sound almost
offended. Well, no, well, it's funny because, you know, we'll send our picks for the next day to our writers and say, like, you know, these are the guys that the system jumping out to the system. Schwarber's just been in every picks article since the first day of the year. I think there was, like, one game where he played against someone good. There was, like, some good pitcher. I can't remember what it was. Other than that, we're running out of new ways to, like, explain why he's a good play. Like, it's just weird. It's just weird that the price hasn't moved at all. He hasn't been like phenomenal, but he's been good. Like, he does K a little bit, but he has power. And if you're just going to hit really kind of anybody at 3,400 that's going to hit first for the Cubs, it's just going to be like kind of a lock play. It wouldn't matter.
And he's actually
exactly in, like, so. It could be like Chris Coughlin. He's not on the team anymore, but like last season, you know, like if Tommy La Stella or Chris Coughlin, like, were hitting first or second in the lineup, like, that was just the guy you played. I think the other stack that people are going to trend to tonight are the Orioles. They get to face Bronson Arroyo. Their run line is just a tick below the Cubs tonight at 5.2, and it's Bronson Arroyo. I mean, this guy wasn't in the majors, wasn't even pitching in the minors for a couple seasons, and then just is somehow back in there. I don't have no idea how. Like, I don't know what the Reds saw. Or they just, I mean, is this a situation like there's just not another pitcher in the minors better than Bronson Arroyo? Like, does that like confuse you sometimes when you see these guys like Arroyo, like Jeff Weaver, coming, like, just pitching in the majors? Like what's the deal here? Like, why is this guy back?
I mean, he hasn't pitched for 3 years and was horrible when he was pitching. He had fewer than 5 Ks per 9 when he was here, so your guess is as good as mine. I don't know, but until then, I'm going to enjoy stacking lefties against him in particular, and really just playing anyone against him. The thing, like, with guys like Arroyo, especially if you're looking for big stacks, and actually there's one other stack I'm going to target for a similar reason, although it's not quite as juicy a situation as this one, is that when you don't strike anyone out, it almost erases the downside of many of the most stackable players, right? So think about Chris Davis. Well, Chris Davis, he can obviously just completely burn you in a given game because there's going to be games where he's a favorite to strike out more than a third of the times he comes to the plate. Bronson Arroyo, yeah, he might strike Chris Davis out, but it's just going to be because Chris Davis swings and misses. He's never going to get deceived here. So I think it's actually like a much better spot than many people are going to give it credit for on the surface. And yeah, it's just crazy that this guy's still allowed to throw batting practice on a major league.
The Great American Ballpark is one of the best power parks in baseball. Really, kind of only behind Coors and possibly Chase Field when the roof is open there. But after that, it's one of the very best power parks. So you're getting Davis in the middle of that lineup. Like, you put it pretty well about just the reduced K expectation on his part. Is that alone? It just makes it pretty safe to play him in cash games. Guys like Adam Jones and Machado, I believe, are both reverse platoon guys for their career. And if not, it's really close. Like, at worst, they're platoon.
Jones is dramatic. I actually made him the keystone example in our TouchTub ebook. If you want a free ebook on setting daily fantasy lineups, dfsr.com/ebook. The most current edition is all about MLB, but you can get the NBA one as well right now. Jones last year was like worse than a pitcher against left-handed pitching, and then was good against righties. So yeah, reverse platoon split guy. Sure.
Machado coming pretty cheap on DraftKings, or excuse me, at FanDuel, only 3,900. I think you see him as a pretty popular play. I think folks are probably making the decision between him or Chris Bryant tonight, who's only 4,100. To me, they're basically coin flips. Probably give a slight edge to Bryant, just because of the overall lineup and the run line. But it's pretty close. You're really not losing anything on either side of those plays. And then, you know, what to make of a guy like Seth Smith? Seth Smith should be hitting leadoff tonight. He's been hitting leadoff against righty so far for the Orioles. But a lot of times he'll get pinch hit for late in games when teams play matchups with a lefty-lefty. How much does that concern you, playing a guy like him? He's cheap and he's in a great situation here. But there's just a chance he doesn't see like that fifth at bat if things are going really well. Like, how much does that play into your thought process with rostering a guy like Smith?
It plays into it a lot. I mean, you actually are in the process of, or maybe you've already published an article about batting lineup order onto the site. And this has been one of the most dramatic findings, I think, that we've had in our internal research here. And one of the reasons why the baseball system has been doing so well recently is just how teams deploy their batting orders. And so, you know, you could go read the article. The Cliff's Notes is, generally speaking, guys higher in the lineup are better values. But one of the interesting things we found about the leadoff position, and to some degree the number two position, is that these spots are pinch hit for a lot more than, say, like the 3, 4, and 5 hitters, who tend to be more of the solid, you know, heart of the order, meat and potatoes sort of batters in the team. Teams will just mess around with their leadoff and number two spots quite a lot. And a guy like Seth Smith, it's a totally different thing to be merely bad against left-handed pitching and to not get to swing the bat at all, right? Like, even if you're only going to get on base 25% of the time, that's worth a lot of points in the long run, you know? And him missing out on that final at-bat, and given how close the margins are in baseball, it kind of moves him from being a guy we'd be really excited about for cash game purposes to kind of being more of a fringe player for big tournaments. And so I think that's kind of where he lands more for me.
Yeah, that's my only concern. And I still think he's a good play. Like, even this is such a good spot for the Orioles that I think I could still talk myself into it at 2,600 and just sort of like hope that it didn't happen for him late. But yeah, that the batting order thing is dramatic, and that'll go out today. But guys like Seth Smith, you know, you think of guys like Matt Joyce kind of that ran into this issue. There's a couple other examples of just players that just – they're sitting at the top of the lineup strictly for their platoons, but then when the platoon goes the wrong way, like, they are just out and they're gonna someone else is gonna fill that void because they just can't swing the bat. Before we get out of here, who's the final stack do you want to throw out there?
Yeah, sure. So, and this is going to be more off the beaten path for sure, but I'd like to look at the whole game of Cleveland and Minnesota. And on the surface, like, Tomlin and Hughes don't really strike you as names that you usually want to be stacking against. Although, you know, Tomlin didn't play that way in his first start there. But the thing I want to key in on here, and this is, I think, speaks more broadly to larger baseball stacking theory and strategy, is when we're going for stacking, we really want to figure out how we can generate the most upside. That much is obvious. Well, how do we do that? What kind of pitchers do we want to target when we're going in that direction? Generally speaking, there's two major types of pitchers I want to stack against. I want to stack against either guys with terrible control, who can let things spiral out of control, let me get to the bullpen very, very early in the game, or I want to be up against guys who just throw strikes. And the reason for that is guys who throw strikes and don't strike a lot of people out is because I'm looking for home runs, and guys who just throw strikes and can give up home runs a lot, therefore, are really on the top of my mind. So Hughes, I think, is actually a very sneakily great guy to stack against because he really hits on two of these targets. Not only does he not strike out a lot of guys, but he also just generates hardly any ground balls. At a 36% ground ball rate, he's one of the most fly ball heavy pitchers in all of the majors. And that just means that when batters make contact against him, they put the ball in the air. And obviously putting the ball in the air can lead to a higher slugging percentage. So, well, yeah, again, he's not a terrible pitcher or anything, and maybe not the guy you want to stack against for cash game purposes from night to night. He is a guy that I'm happy to target for big tournament purposes. Likewise with Tomlin, to a slightly lesser degree. I mean, with Tomlin, you get fewer walks and you get more ground balls, but not dramatically so. And as he proved last game, he's certainly capable of giving up home runs. Dramatic home run rates in the last couple of years, 1.86 and 1.78 home run per nine in 2015 and 2016. Those are among the highest totals in the league. So just two guys, you know, the opposing lineups facing them maybe aren't that inspiring necessarily, but when you're getting such good matchups for big stacks and big tournaments, I'm very much intrigued for my more, like, you know, fringe on the outside of my GPP.
Yeah, stacks. I kind of like the way this day is already shaking out. Like, I like it when we have some clear-cut pitching options and we're not, like, kind of just, like, wading through the waters of just, like, is this guy slightly better than this guy? That was kind of the case I thought yesterday. I mean, Lackey was a good play, but then the options after him each had their warts. I don't see that as the case today. I think the pitching options are pretty clear, and I actually think the offensive options are pretty clear as well with the teams that we just mentioned. All right, that's it for us today. We'll be back again on Thursday talking more baseball. DFSR.com/MLB will get you a free 3-day trial to our projection system. That'll be Optimal Lineups, powered by good friends over at lineuplab.com. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. You're good to go, buddy. Enjoy your evening of baseball, and I will talk to you again later in the week.